Good morning. It's good to finally be able to be up here without a sling on. And I had a hallelujah moment this week when I went to the doctor Monday morning and he told me I could leave it off now. But the last 2 months has taught me something. I'm not sure that I will ever use the phrase again of I could beat you with one arm tied behind my back. Because I had to have my son and my wife help tie my shoes in the last 2 months because I couldn't do it myself. Have you ever had someone that you just couldn't get ahead of? You try to pull a trick on them and they get you back worse than the degree that you ever did to them. My father was one of those people. It was really hard to get ahead of Dad, especially when it come to practical jokes. And if you ever think of it, ask Jay Ford about that. And because Dad definitely, as the phrase goes, he thought outside the box. And I will not even tell you what he done to Jay Ford. But when my sister Cindy still lived up here in her early married years, her husband, Mark Morris, loved to test my dad with pranks. And Dad would usually get him back worse than Mark did to him to begin with. Now, many of you may have heard this story that I'm going to tell you right now about the time that Mark got the best of Dad and Dad never got him back. But there's a strange thing about this story, because Mark never told us about this event ever taking place until Dad was dead. Because that was the only time that he was rest assured that Dad wouldn't get him back. And so the day before Dad's funeral, Mark went ahead and told us this story 25 years after it happened. And he told us the story of the weekend that they went down to see Mark's parents in Kansas City. And they got back pretty late, and Mark and Cindy just lived 2 miles away from Mom and Dad at that time. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning on summer afternoon, or summer, and Dad usually liked to sleep with the windows open when it was in the summer. And so at 1 o'clock on a Monday morning, Mark pulls into Dad's driveway and shines his headlights right into Dad's bedroom window. And he lays on the horn until he's sure that Dad is awake. And then he steps out the window, yells out the car window and says, "Vern, I'm home!" And then he jumps back in the car and takes off down the road before Dad can get a chance to get outside and see what's going on. And well, any of you that knew my dad also knows that Dad didn't hear very well. And that one of Dad's favorite sayings was, "I don't know what you said, but I'll take it as a compliment." And so, with that in mind, Dad had been well awakened, but he didn't make out the message. And his interpretation of what happened was that somebody had just stopped and told him that his cows were out. And so Dad spent the next 2 hours, 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning, driving up and down the gravel roads, trying to find his black Angus cows in the pitch black darkness of the night. And I never knew about this story, but he said something to Mark evidently later on, he had no clue that it was Mark that had woke him up. So Mark never did get repaid for that encounter with Dad. And because he had learned from the past that if you mess with Dad, you better be prepared for a payback. Well, my father took great pride in being on time and being prepared. So we took great enjoyment when we had a period of time when Dad ran out of gas on the way to church two or three times in a short period of time. And so the next Sunday night, when he got to church, there were about 15 gas cans sitting at the basement door down here. And we got his picture taken, and he was always took it well when somebody was able to throw it back at him. But he wasn't very well prepared when he took off for church those nights, and he ran out of gas on the way to church. And so we got to have some fun at his expense. But between Dad's growing up on a farm in the, during the Depression and his military service at the end of World War II, these events in Dad's life usually made him well prepared. And he tried to teach that to us kids growing up, that you be aware of your surroundings and be prepared to adjust to what you have to do in order to survive. Which reminds me of Marty. And Marty's talk that he has given to us about his Boy Scout adventures, and what point would Marty have raised with the Boy Scouts? What is their motto? Be prepared. Is that right, Marty?
Right.
Okay. See, I remembered something that you said. And so that is basically the subject matter we're going to discuss today. And so someone says, be prepared, and you say, for what? For whatever. Life is unpredictable. Life will throw you challenges, will throw you surprises, and it is to your best interest to find a way to be prepared, to be observant, and be aware of your surroundings. And you might be able to be the survivor instead of the statistic. And there were a lot of statistics recently in the news in Japan. But you know, sadly, many parents spend more time preparing their children to play sports than they do preparing them to remain faithful in the church and to be successful in life, the challenges that life will present. So as you are a parent, be aware of that you give due diligence to preparing for the Lord's service as well as for the Little League games. So if you ask a variety of people if they are ready, if they're prepared, what kind of responses will you get? If you look at a baby is ready to do three things. A baby is prepared or ready to eat, he's ready to sleep, and you can figure out what that third thing is. A five-year-old is ready for school to start. A fourth grader is ready for a fire because he's been practicing fire drills at school that they might be ready. A fifth grader is ready to go play ball. A 12-year-old is ready for school to be over. And a 16-year-old is ready to go meet some girls. And whether it's a child or adult, at most any age, people as a whole are more ready to go meet their friends than they are ready to meet their Maker. They think they are ready. If you turn to Matthew, the 7th chapter, verse 21 through 23, I'd like to read a reminder to you about those that think they are ready. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name we've cast out devils, and in thy name we've done many wonderful works. And I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, that ye work iniquity. So many of us need, all of us need to examine our lives on a regular basis to see whether we are ready in our own eyes or ready in God's eyes. Are we prepared to meet our Maker? Because Matthew, the 7th chapter, tells us there's a lot of people that think they are prepared to meet their Maker, and they really are going to be in for a surprise. You know, it ends up that the Japanese government only thought that they were ready. They only thought that they were prepared to deal with natural disasters. But when they got hit with three all at once, and have ended up with 10,000 dead so far, and are now facing a radiation disaster that is quickly becoming a world problem and not just a local problem, they thought they were ready. But we, as life goes on, are often taught lessons to show us that we aren't always as smart as we think we are. We're not always as prepared as we think we are. Many people have learned how to survive and be prepared to live on the streets in large cities. But if they were thrown out into the wilderness, they wouldn't know how to survive. And the vice versa is also true. Many that have lived out in the wilderness would have no clue how to survive on the streets of a large city. The same can be said about some Christians. Many can survive if they're with other Christians, but if they're not prepared to survive on their own. I am scared for you teenagers. Why? I am scared because I have lived enough years that I can look back and remember my own difficulty getting through those years myself. And as I try to watch people as we assemble, sometimes you can see whether somebody has really got their attention right here. And it's so easy as a teenager to not be able to focus like we need to in our youth. And when I look back, quite honestly, into my teen years, knowing what I know now, I had days where I would have ended up being ashamed and embarrassed if I would have been required to meet my Maker on that day. And I think about the young men that have come and stayed with us as we've hosted different meetings through the years. We were fortunate enough to have Clint Sparks stay with us. He was a wonderful young man, and he worked hard trying to help others. And we ended up one time with one of his shampoo bottles, and it's got his name on it. And we've kept that around as a reminder that we don't know when our days are numbered. I think Clint was only 19 when he's on his way, one of the events he was going to do that night was a Bible study, I believe. But if someone had to go, at least it was someone from our impression that was ready to meet his Maker. But I can see the same struggles taking place in people going through their teen years now, as some of them that I had, focusing on the time of your life when it is difficult to focus. And if you didn't hear Mike Warner say it last Sunday, I'd like to repeat one comment that he made, because I agree wholeheartedly that this country is probably in a decline, and that if the Lord doesn't come back first, this country at some point is going to be headed for difficult times. And now that you're in your youth, you'd better make your roots deep in the church, because the day is coming in your future where you're going to need it. You will find out crudely and rudely who are not your friends. And you will find out just how important your church family will become, not only for your spiritual well-being, but probably for your physical well-being. It is important now as well, but it will be multiplied many times in the future. Most of us have probably had the TV on at some point to hear the introduction to the TV show, even if you haven't watched it, of Cops. And they play this tune, "Bad Boys, Bad Boys, What You Gonna Do When They Come For You?" And it's a catchy tune. But have you ever thought about the fact that if, as much as we are at disagreement with our government, they do provide a degree of stability in our civil world, our civil lives. And if the day ever comes to where we can't pay our police and the police don't come to serve, who's going to come get the bad boys when they come to your door? It could happen. You know, we don't like to deal with death because it reminds us of our own fragileness, our own fate. But I remember in my teenage years growing up, Ron Van Egdom was 3 years older than I was. Growing up in our teen years, I seen him at the church meetings. And now, 2 weeks ago, we were visiting with him in his hospital room, and he seemed very well that day. And now we're preparing for his funeral. So should I be concerned? I would hope so. Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter, verse 11, tells us, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to us all." The average man's lifespan is supposed to be over 70 years. So did Ron get shortchanged? Depends on what your priority is. If your priority is to be ready and to receive a reward that can't be taken away, he got lucky. He's already there. If your goal is to see if you can reach 100 years of life physically, then he got shortchanged. How do you think Ron feels? Ron was totally at peace with his fate, knowing that his days were numbered, and so was his wife. They had fought the fight long enough that they realized this life isn't the permanent thing anyway. And it was refreshing to us 2 weeks ago to be able to see how they had accepted that into their life. It's important to learn from life as we see events happen around us. Ron's last days, knowing he had cancer for the last 2 years, and the last 30 days, knowing that the doctors could do no more to help him. He came to peace with this, and he knew his time was short. And some people in this world would love to know when their time was coming. You know, get things in order and start thinking about God. That's a little bit late. We need to remember what we're told. "Remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them," in Ecclesiastes 12th chapter and verse 1. Clint Sparks didn't know his day was there. And neither did Larry George. Larry got up to go to work one morning and he never come back home. And if Larry was here right now, he would remind you again, just as Kelly has said in the past, Larry had stated up here himself, something can happen and just like this, it'll be all over with. And that's exactly what Larry experienced. So who was the lucky one? Was it Ron or was it Larry? Is there a good way? What is the good way to go? The good way to go is when you're prepared to go. Whether it be like this, or whether you have time to prepare as Brother Ron and his wife have, we don't get that guarantee. But we do get the warning in Ecclesiastes, you better remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Either way you go, I can tell you, you will meet your Maker. My Grandma Engel died of cancer and suffered a horrible death. She died when I was about 12 years old. And I cannot tell you the number of times that my dad related to us kids, I hope I don't have to go that way and suffer like she did. Well, my dad got his wish in a way. He didn't die of cancer. But I can't say that he come out any better when you look at losing a little more of your brain every day and become less stable. It was harder to watch that for me. To not have somebody you could communicate with than it would be to have a physical ailment such as the cancer. So when you have been blessed with the mental capacity to stay with you through the whatever years you are granted in life, include that in your prayers to thank God for that. I think our country may see harder times that we need to be prepared for. But I know that Judgment Day is coming, no matter what happens to our country. 1 Peter, the 4th chapter, verse 17 and 18, read in this way. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begins at us, what is the end of those that obey not the gospel? If the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and sinner appear? Where does judgment start? He's going to start sorting out us. You have done my will. You haven't. He's not going to start judging in the world. He's going to start purifying the church. He's going to pick out which one of us are actually doing the will and which one of us are merely here. And if that is not enough to make you start to prepare, I don't know what is. Judgment starts within this house. Where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? If we are observant to those that have lived around us, we've had both examples given. We've watched Ron struggle for 2 years and finally meet his Maker. We get a phone call during our daily events and hear, Larry just died this morning. Clint just got killed in a car wreck. Are you prepared? We're going to bring this service to a close and we're going to give you a chance to get prepared. You can be prepared to meet your Maker before you walk out the door to your car today. Be honest with yourself as we stand and sing this invitation song.